Help is here. That's what President Joe Biden tweeted just after Congress's final passage of the massive federal COVID-19 relief package. $1.9 trillion.
The fact is, if you've got a huge economy that has stalled out, you probably have to do something that's pretty big to get it going.
This is the Stateside Pod. I'm Zoe Clark, in for April Bear. Coming up, we're going to speak with an economist to try and break it down and just fathom what kind of money that will mean for Michigan. But first, Melissa Nan Burke is with us, Detroit News reporter based in D.C. Hey, Melissa.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
So after that tweet by Biden, he then, of course, signed this bill on Friday. And it's huge in both, you know, scope and dollars. There are more than $10 billion coming directly to Michigan. What exactly is that going to look like?
It is a huge amount of money. The state government itself, I believe, is going to get some, the estimates are somewhere around $5.6 billion. The city of Detroit alone is slotted to get about $880 million. And then you have cities and counties around the state that also will be getting millions of dollars. I think Flint is supposed to get like 99, Grand Rapids, 94 million. And a lot of these, you know, municipalities in these counties, they're hurting. Their revenue took a hit during COVID, and they're still having to provide a lot of services, you know, and a lot of them are involved in the vaccination distribution push right now. So they, you know, they could use this money.
Well, so let's start there and talk about these cities and municipalities that are going to get the money. As you said, you know, Detroit likely to get the most, then Flint, and then some other cities like Grand Rapids, Lansing. How much of these dollars will be sort of backfill, right? Like, as you said, into revenue that was lost versus money for infrastructure or building? Like, do we know yet exactly how it's going to be used?
We don't know quite yet. I mean, they haven't even received these dollars yet. And there are some restrictions on the money, I should say, you know, so they can use this for pandemic related costs. They can use it to offset lost revenues to provide essential government services. They can also use it for infrastructure projects like broadband, water, sewer, but they also can't use it for backfilling pension funds, for example. And they can't also, at least on the state level, they are not supposed to use it to subsidize like tax breaks. You know, you can't turn around as the state government and decide to refund everybody's money or, you know, or cancel payments for the coming year or something like that. But we'll have to see with the Treasury Department how they define all that.
We know that there's going to be money in emergency aid for Michigan schools and for Head Start centers, also to support vaccination and testing sites. Let's talk about individuals, though, right? Because, of course, one of the things that a lot of folks have been keeping an eye on, because it affects people directly in their wallets, is these $1,400 stimulus checks. Fill us in on that. I know a lot of folks are interested in what that's going to look like and when people are going to see those dollars in their pockets.
From what I read, they might see them pretty soon. I read that payments could start rolling out this week. They are going to be about $1,400 for most Americans. That covers about 85% of Americans, according to some, you know, some estimates that I've seen. It does phase out for higher earners. You know, the other thing I would add is another big change is they have a provision in there that would bump up the child tax credit for the year 2021 to $3,000 a child. And that's for kids ages 6 to 17 years old. And then it would be $3,600 annually for each child under 6. And again, that benefit phases out for higher earners. But that'll make a big difference, I think, for a lot of people.
So let's talk in the last minute or so that we have you just about sort of the pure politics of this. Of course, it passed. Biden signed it on Friday. He and Vice President Kamala Harris are now going to go out and kind of sell this package right to the American people. It is popular, at least that's sort of what polls have shown. Why the need then to go and across the country and tout it? Is it simply just to say, hey, a win for Democrats is a win here politically?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they, you know, they definitely see this as a huge win and they want to go sell it. Of course, this was very divisive in along partisan lines in Congress. This package got no Republican votes. That is a change from the other two very large COVID relief packages, which were bipartisan. Democrats used a reconciliation process, which is a fancy way of saying they passed it basically with only Democratic votes in the Senate using this parliamentary procedure with a simple majority. I think there was only one Democrat in the House that didn't vote for this. So the Democrats were very united on this. And like you said, it is very popular. 7 out of 10 Americans in polling are saying that they love this. But I think that Biden is looking back to the 2009 stimulus that was passed under President Obama. I've read reports, you know, he has believed it was a mistake that Obama didn't go out and try to sell this to the public after he passed it. He thinks that they didn't get enough credit, you know, for that stimulus, for what the work they did in 2009. So I think he's trying to get out on the front end of this. I think Democrats see this as a huge benefit for them going into to the next midterm elections, and they want to make sure that they're getting credit for it.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but in just a second, we're going to dig into what this massive amount of federal dollars might mean for you and Michigan's economic recovery. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
According to the Associated Press, to pay out this coronavirus relief package, an average of $3.7 billion would have to be spent every single day of this year. That is $44,000 every second. Charles Ballard is an economist and professor at Michigan State University. Hey, professor.
Hey, Zoe. It's good to hear your voice.
Oh, it's so good to hear yours. And I don't know about you. I am having trouble just even contextualizing, you know, $1.9 trillion, $10.3 billion specifically for Michigan. Like $10 billion is basically the size of Michigan's general fund budget. Right? Like, how does one even go about grasping these kind of numbers?
Well, you know, I don't think I don't blame you for having some trouble wrapping your head around these numbers. I mean, we're not used in our daily lives. We don't use trillions a lot. That's an awful lot of zeros. Just for context, the U.S. economy is about $21 trillion of output per year. That's the gross domestic product. And Michigan's economy is about $500 billion. So against those backdrops, maybe these numbers won't seem so huge. The fact is, if you've got a huge economy that has stalled out, you probably have to do something that's pretty big to get it going, to keep it going. And there is an honest debate about whether the $1.9 trillion is the right number. Some people think it's too small. Mm-hmm. Some think it's too big. I think certainly a lot of the things that are in the package are very much needed at this time. I like the additional stimulus checks. I like the enhanced, the extended unemployment benefits, because we want to have enough purchasing power in the economy to keep it going until, hopefully not that many months from now, we're in a much better situation in terms of controlling the virus. Because, and I can't emphasize too much, controlling the virus is absolutely central to all of this. And that's why the portion of the package that goes to vaccines and vaccine distribution and all of that kind of stuff is vitally important.
So in terms of the money that Michigan is going to see, you know, we were talking with Melissa Nan Burke, the reporter from the Detroit News, and saying that some of this money is sort of earmarked for specific things. Other, it feels like, is a little more open to interpretation. Break down what is actually sort of money that the state is going to, for lack of better words, get to play around with.
Well, my sense is that this is not all earmarked. I've had some discussions with some state officials, and they're asking questions about what should be the priorities, because the federal government has not specified down to the penny exactly what it should be spent on. I'm certainly hoping that a substantial fraction of it is spent on infrastructure. I mean, when you look at the Flint water crisis, when you look at the dam roads, as Governor Whitmer calls them, when you look at so many aspects of water, sewers, roads, bridges, dams, we had a dam burst last year. If it were up to me, I would put a substantial fraction of that federal help into those projects. And one reason why I would do that is that it would provide, infrastructure projects provide employment for the kind of people who have struggled the most. You know, the doctors and the computer programmers and the research scientists have done okay during this pandemic. It's the people at the bottom end of the ladder that have not. And just for decades now, manual laborers have not done well. And there are jobs, of course, there are jobs for engineers in infrastructure as well, but some of it is just jobs for workers doing hard work. And those folks, many of them have had spells of unemployment. Many of them, even when they're working, their wages are not great. So one aspect of this recession that we've experienced is that it's a very disequalizing recession.
Well, and I want to talk about that. Proponents of this bill have called it basically the largest anti-poverty measure in U.S. history. What is that actually going to then look like on the ground? We are talking about a lot of money going directly to cities, municipalities, to the state. What about folks' pocketbooks? Is this going to really make a difference in terms of the, you know, quote unquote, war on poverty?
It may. A very important part of this package is the greatly expanded child credit. Also a change in the administration of the child credit so that people won't just get one check a year, but they'll get monthly infusion for low and middle income families. And the estimate is that that could cut child poverty in half. If so, it would be one of the few steps that we've taken in the last 50 years toward really solving the problem. You know, it used to be that the elderly were the group that was in the United States that was most likely to be in poverty. But for decades now, it's children who are the group that are most likely to be in poverty, which I think that's very unfortunate. And it has implications for them when they become adults. So it will be very interesting to see. We don't yet know the full effect of this. The Census Bureau's annual report on income distribution and poverty comes out in the middle of September, so almost exactly 6 months from now. We'll have the report for 2020, and then we will have the report for 2021 a year after that. I think it will take time to see how the various pieces offset each other, because on the one hand, you've got loss of employment, which would tend to increase poverty, especially since so many of the people who have lost their jobs are low-wage workers. On the other hand, you've got the stimulus checks, the unemployment benefits, and now the enhanced child tax credit pushing in the other direction. I'm cautiously optimistic that by a year or so from now, we will say that we've fought back against the poverty increase that was caused several months ago by the virus.
You know, Charlie, I just think about how many conversations you and I had, you know, going on now more than 10 years during the Great Recession. And it really feels like in some respects, some folks got left behind. Can a bill, you know, some argue too big, too small, can a bill make sure that all folks are lifted up, or are there still going to be segments, even with $1.9 trillion, that is just simply not going to be able to be fixed unless huge systemic economic issues and social policy issues are changed in this country?
The short answer to your question is no. One bill will not solve these problems, or at least in according to my values, it's a problem that the United States economy is twice as big as it was back in the 70s. And yet there are lots of workers whose take-home pay is less than it was in 1973, especially those who do not have a college education. And so I think if we were serious about making what I would consider to be a more just and equitable society, and about fighting poverty, we'd have to do a lot more than this. And it's, you know, if it's a pattern, this great divergence, as many economists call it, this huge increase in income inequality that's been going on for more than 40 years now, if it built up over 40 years, it's not going to be fixed in 1 year. Mm. It'll take sustained effort in terms of if it were up to me, I would increase maternity leave. I would increase access to early childhood education. I'd do lots of things to improve K through 12. I would make a more progressive tax system. There are a long list, because most of our policies for the last 40 years have gone in the other direction. I mean, you look at the biggest policy change during the Trump years was the tax cut passed in December of 2017. Mm-hmm. The benefits of which went overwhelmingly to the top 20%, especially if they have large portfolios of corporate stock. Well, that's saying we weren't unequal enough. We need to continue with the great divergence. I think we've gone far enough with inequality. I'd like to go back in the other direction. And this bill is a step in that direction, I believe.
Charlie Ballard is the author of Michigan's Economic Future. And Charlie, with this latest $1.9 trillion bill, I wonder if another book, another chapter of the book isn't necessary.
Well, you know, I will be honest with you. I'm not currently planning to do another Michigan book, but I am kind of working on a book which is tentatively titled The Fall and Rise of Inequality, pointing out to people that inequality decreased dramatically in the 30s, 40s, and 50s and 60s. And then it turned around, and now we're back to the degree of inequality that we had a century ago. But talking about all the economics and politics of that's something that's on my list for the next couple of years. Right. And I hope to be able to write a good book along those lines.
Well, I can't wait to read it. Charlie Ballard, as always, thank you so much for your insight.
And thank you so much, Zoe. It's a great pleasure to be on the program and great to hear your voice.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I am Zoe Clark. You can find the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org. Today's show was produced by April Van Buren. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Our theme music is by 14KT. Additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks so much, as always, for listening.